My name is Sunny Miller. We are here on the telephone at Trap Rock Peace Center in Deerfield, Massachusetts. On the line is Glenn Milner out in Seattle. Thank you so much for joining us, Glenn.
Yeah, thanks.
I should tell listeners that you've been working for many years, since the early 1980s, on the Trident nuclear submarine issues with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action in Paulsbow, Washington. Thank you so much for your long persistence. I'd like to start, Glenn, with by asking, how did you break the story about the Navy firing depleted uranium off the Pacific coast out that way?
Yeah, I was doing research on Trident nuclear submarines. So, the issues that we deal with are the Trident submarine system, and this one particular Freedom of Information Act request was regarding navigation hazards for Trident submarines, which are actually a lot of different things. They're told to stay out of some areas because the Navy's testing or there's some activity of some type. But in sandwiched in this thick stack of papers was mentioned that this one battleship, the USS Fife, was firing depleted uranium rounds in this one warning area, and actually the warning area is like 25 to 100 miles off the coast of Washington, and it's actually in a prime fishing habitat. And so at that point, I started doing research on this. It's the gun that was doing the shooting was a 20-millimeter gun that's used as a last defense for incoming missiles or airplanes that happen to get past the defenses. So it's a last-ditch system, and it fires from, depending on the type, it can fire 3,000 rounds to 4,500 rounds in a minute. So it just spits out just a slew of bullets.
And that's 3,000 to 4,000 rounds per minute.
Per minute.
And a 20-millimeter shell would be 2 centimeters in diameter. So we're talking about, a fat cigar-sized shell.
Sure.
Now, so the close-in weapon system, I understand, is practice-fired at least twice a month by the Navy. Is that right?
Yeah, twice a month. The Navy said they have to fire 400 to 600 rounds every time they test-fired or they calibrate it. Almost every surface ship in the Navy has one of these close-in weapon systems, and many of them have two of these systems on a ship.
Mm-hmm. And so they've got to probably practice with both guns to make sure they're working.
Well, they would, yeah. They'd have to shoot both of them.
I understand from a young veteran out our way, Eric Wasileski, that his ship fired into the Chesapeake Bay on a regular basis, I believe weekly, and that not only was the plastic, the sabots around the units flying all over the place and leaving a visual mess, but that depleted uranium was headed down to the bottom of those seabeds. Could you tell me your concerns? These prime fishing areas, of course, are a great concern. I understand the depleted uranium would not be burning, and so it's not the problem of uranium oxide, but instead a slow rusting, so to speak, of the DU, the so-called depleted uranium. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there isn't the aerosol effect because it doesn't hit armor, but it the bullets do break down water, and they break down faster in salt water. And the thing about it is, we're touching on this, in terms of the vast quantities of bullets that are fired. And there's on one of the websites, it might be like Global Security, I think, there's one manufacturer that made 20 million rounds of bullets for the Navy and out of DU.
Do you recall where that factory was sited?
I think it's on the Global Security on their website.
Would that be globalsecurity.com?
I'm looking at it actually right now. Yeah, Global Security, and it's on the Mark 149 20-millimeter armor-piercing bullet, and it's on their website. The company that made them is General Dynamics Ordnance and Tactical Systems, and that's just like one. That's the only one that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's been some smaller contracts that I know of. But, and the other thing, the Navy has said that they plan on using all these depleted uranium stocks by the year 2008. Actually, I should back up, though. When I first started doing research on this 20-millimeter bullet, I went, you know, you go to the Navy website, and what it says on this close-in weapon system is that they converted to tungsten in 1988, you know, which to me indicates that they don't use DU anymore. Well, that's not true, of course. They're trying to use up these 20 million rounds. And I don't know. I mean, I've asked the Navy through the Freedom of Information Act a lot of questions concerning, you know, where they've fired these rounds, how many bullets they fired, and what they said is they don't keep records on that, which is a problem in itself with their license with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But, you know, it's conceivable in some of these areas, like off the coast of Washington, that, you know, they've got several of these testing areas, or what they call warning areas. I mean, there could be millions of bullets of this one gun system in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of this stuff, I mean, if they've been firing it since the early 80s, and they're firing it over this long period of time, you know, they could be in various stages of breaking down, in the salt water. And it's a lot of material, and there's been no study on this. Well, in fact, the Navy couldn't study it, apparently, because they don't know where they've even fired it, is what they said.
Well, the troops on board might know where it's been fired, and I hope more and more veterans will speak up about what's been done, because, of course, their health is influenced, and is all of ours as we eat these wonderful fish from the oceans. I wonder if you could tell us about any endangered species out your way in the Pacific. Are they affected?
Well, there's a number. I mean, the orca whales are considered endangered species. Or at least a depleted species, I believe, and that's their area. I mean, there's you know, mammals in their area and fish, of course, in that area. And as far as the, you know, you brought up the issue of the sailors' health, you know, when the story broke in January of 2003, the Navy stated a lot of things about depleted uranium in the close-in weapon system. One of the things they stated was this is the only gun system that they have that fires DU, which has turned out to be not correct. There's a 25-millimeter gun that sits on the deck of a ship. I think it's called, this is the Mark 38 machine gun that fires depleted uranium, and also I think some of their Harrier jets fire depleted uranium.
I see.
They also stated that the sailors are medically monitored to handle the DU, and that's not true at all. I mean, they're not required to by their own license with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they definitely don't medically monitor radiation exposure to the sailors. And what they state is that they shouldn't be around depleted uranium enough to get enough exposure to cause a problem.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Glenn Milner in Seattle with Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action in Paulsbo, Washington. Glenn, aside from the fishing concerns and the health of the sailors, residents in the cities where these materials are shipped might want to know about what's being handled, shipped, and stored in their towns, villages, on our highways. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's a problem in itself as well. The Department of Transportation has allowed the military an exemption for the handling of depleted uranium and for the shipment. And actually, this exemption is called DOT Exemption 9649 is what it is. And it's actually renewed every so often. The next renewal date for this exemption is June 30th, 2004. And what this exemption does is it allows the military to ship depleted uranium without a radioactive placard on the cargo or on the container that it's being shipped in. They actually, you know, when it arrives at the ship, when it's on the surface of the ship, they'll placard it or label it something else, but it's not really until it's in inside the ship, you know, they put up signs that state that it's radioactive and caution the sailors about the area. And when I found out about this exemption, you know, I was a little bit surprised, and I contacted the Department of Transportation and asked what the reasoning was for this. And in their renewals, the military doesn't have to state it, but they sent me a letter from actually it's dated August 11th, 1986, from the Department of the Army, and the reasons, it gives the reasons why they wanted this exemption. This is the first time they applied for it, and it's actually pretty surprising. This one letter from the Army to the Department of Transportation, they state the reasons, and the first is marking the outside of the DU munitions containers as radioactive may create friction with foreign governments when foreign nations handle DU munitions during shipping, loading, or unloading.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we do not want to generate unnecessary public concern about the radioactive risks associated with DU munitions. And thirdly, we do not want to raise public concerns by placarding trucks with the words radioactive and explosive, since the combination of these two hazard class placards may be construed to mean that nuclear weapons are being shipped when this simply is not the case. Of course, the case is when you have depleted uranium packaged with the explosive shells, you've got a dirty bomb.
Mm-hmm.
If there was an accident with a truck, if there was a bad accident where, say, the driver was incapacitated, you know, the fire responders who would arrive wouldn't know that there was radioactive material involved.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably treat it like a normal fire. Well, mm-hmm. They'd probably realize it was explosive or burning, but there's no way that anyone would know. And it's pretty surprising to me that they'd allow that exemption. And I think, I've started to look into this, but I think folks should try to encourage the Department of Transportation not to renew this exemption for the military, that its citizens should have a right to know that radioactive and explosive material is being shipped through their areas.
Mm-hmm. And that was DOT... exemption number 9649.
That's right.
Glenn Milner, can you tell us also, in addition to the abating the public alarm that would naturally rise, what are your findings regarding the hazard when DUs burned?
Excuse me?
Are you familiar with the hazards involved when DU is burned?
Oh, yeah. Well, the military is, too. In their nuclear regulatory license, they have stated the dangers of an accident. And let me see, I'm kind of actually thumbing through a couple notes here. But they warn first responders to stay out of the area. And they know full well that it begins to aerosol. Here's what it says. This is in the Navy's Naval Radioactive Materials Permit that states, regarding an accident involving fire, the Naval Radioactive Materials Permit states, quote, transportation accidents, incidents with fire. When involved in a fire, depleted uranium may oxidize, generating a downwind hazard in the form of a DU oxide dust plume.
Mm-hmm.
The significant health risks associated with the plume are, one, heavy metal poisoning from the inhalation of the dust, and two, the radiological hazards associated with inhalation of the dust. First responder personnel should adhere to the following information when approaching the scene of a DU fire. And it goes on to state they should approach a scene from upwind, ensure all non-emergency personnel are evacuated from all downwind areas. It says first responders should wear self-contained breathing apparatus, respirators, to protect against inhalation of any DU oxide dust or remain upwind of the fire. It goes on to say evacuate the immediate vicinity of the accident and notify the emergency number identified, and there's this form that they have to buy.
But, well, certainly the self-contained breathing apparatus would be a good protection, but I understand that the filters of the M40 and other gas masks don't trap the very small 0.1 and 0.2 micron size particles that are emitted in a DU fire.
Sure.
So thank you so much for doing the research that discovers and uncovers this sort of information deliberately hidden from public view.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is not so much with the type of mask responders are wearing, but the fact that no one will know that it's radioactive because it's not even placarded because of their exemption.
And, of course, we now know that the government interfered with the Environmental Protection Agency reports following September 11th in New York City and gave the impression to workers, businesses, teachers, children, encouraging them to return to the area when there may have been depleted uranium contamination on site at the Twin Towers, because ballast in aircraft can contain these heavy uranium weights. Of course, uranium wastes are plentiful, very cheap, and, shucks, they happen to be radioactive. Let's ignore that part. Seems to be the government's position. I wonder if you can tell us more about how you come to find out these sorts of findings. What's your method of using the Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, well, when you file a Freedom of Information Act request, it's actually a legal, there's legal status to the inquiry. And, the government is, of course, required to respond. They may want to charge you, but, if you can show that you understand the information that you're trying to receive and you have the ability to disseminate it to the public, they should. You have a pretty good grounds to receive it for free without being charged.
Hmm.
And a lot of the times, actually, the issue of depleted uranium was pretty difficult for me. The Trident nuclear weapon system is kind of in several parts of the Navy, several agencies, but depleted uranium is a lot of different branches of our government deal with the Department of Transportation, Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The Army has oversees certain parts of it. And then there's branches of the Army, Military Traffic Management Command. So, there's a lot of different agencies involved, and it's kind of hard to track it. But you can. In this case, the Navy has been really reluctant to release information. Like I said before, they've actually stated their high levels of the Navy have said that they don't keep records of where they fire it. They're actually, the thing that's kind of works against the Navy in this case, this is still evolving because they just started filing these requests in January, but what works against the Navy is the fact by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission license, they're required to as part of their license. And in fact, it says if they lose a certain amount of depleted uranium or they can't find it, they're supposed to immediately notify the NRC of that. And I think the amount is something like if they were to lose 42 of these 20-millimeter bullets, they're supposed to it's a pretty big deal, and they're supposed to contact the NRC right away. And here they're saying they don't know. And I've filed a complaint with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they are actually investigating this issue. There was another issue, too, where the Navy sent the Coast Guard in Seattle at Pier 36. This was a couple years ago in August 2001, they sent 1,700 rounds of depleted uranium 20-millimeter bullets, and they made the decision. Actually, this one Coast Guard cutter had requested 20-millimeter bullets for their close-in weapon system, and the Navy just arbitrarily decided they didn't have enough tungsten bullets, so they sent DU without even telling the Coast Guard. And this one Coast Guard cutter had the bullets on ship for a couple of weeks before they realized it was depleted uranium. That they don't even have a license to handle it. They're not even supposed to have it. And so they turned it back over to the Navy as soon as they could to get rid of it.
I see. The Coast Guard is not supposed to have this.
No, they don't have a license to handle depleted uranium.
Well, lucky people who've signed up for the Coast Guard.
Well, yeah, if the Navy doesn't send it to you anyway. So, yeah, that's correct. Actually, the Navy probably shouldn't have a license to have it either because they don't seem to be following any of the regulations that they and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have drawn up for them to follow.
Glenn, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your hopes for actions to come. You've said that you hope the public will issue an outcry saying to pleas to the Department of Transportation to deny the exemption for labeling and neglecting to put on accurate labels about both explosive and radioactive materials. Exemption number 9649, which you said expired June 30th, 2004. I wonder if you can tell us of any other action-oriented efforts that you think might be helpful in informing the public about the hazard and helping the public to be empowered to stop the use of depleted uranium.
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, first off, what the work of a lot of activists are doing, well, such as Doug Rockey, who goes, you know, speaks around the United States and other areas, is very critical. I mean, First off, people should find out and understand the hazards of depleted uranium and the real tragic things that are happening to people in other countries and to their environment, and also in our area as well. I mean, you know, the U.S. military will use our areas to test depleted uranium, test nuclear weapons, and expose all of us to this toxic material. So, I mean, first off, I think people should understand what depleted uranium is. And on the issue of shipping, they should know if depleted uranium is used or fired in their areas. It's surprising here, you know, we don't, in the Northwest, we haven't seen this kind of destruction by the military normally, where they've just willingly damaged the environment. So they should understand that. In the terms of shipping, you know, the highways are ours, and we have a right to know when depleted uranium or these types of toxic, dangerous materials are in our neighborhoods and our highways. So, I mean, that's the reason. Yeah, I'd like to see an end to this exemption. People should know that this is all over the United States where it's deployed. I mean, fortunately in Washington State, it seems as though the Army's not using it here from what I understand, but I mean, certainly they are in a lot of other areas.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if you can give us any commentary on the use of the courts to file lawsuits to stop the use of these radioactive waste munitions.
Yeah, well, when we first found out that the USS Fife was firing DU off the coast of Washington, we considered legal action, and we still are. I mean, one of the problems is the distance and how the law applies in the ocean. With the Trident nuclear weapon system, we have a lawsuit, and unfortunately, I guess I have to say, our lawsuit against this, there's a Trident II, which is a D-5 missile that's being upgraded at the submarine base, which is actually just 15 miles from Seattle. There's 1,760 nuclear warheads that are deployed there just in our backyard. So our lawsuit, you know, by any rational standard would have won, but we had, you know, a lifetime appointed federal judge ruled in the favor of the Navy. He said that the risks involved aren't that great. We've appealed it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we we've actually found out some more information from the Navy on the Trident that it appears as though the Ninth Circuit's going to allow us to put into the lawsuit. So, I mean, the lawsuits are difficult. There was a terrific win in terms of the Navy sonar. The folks working on that got an incredible injunction against the Navy from using the sonar, which is damaging whales.
Mm.
So,
what was the date of that, approximately?
It was in the last few months.
Mid-2003,
yeah. Mm-hmm. In that particular case, the Navy was testing sonar, and people at sea actually saw the marine mammals reacting, and some of them had died, and some of them were acting pretty frantic. So there was, firsthand sighting of the results of the sonar. It's just tougher in the case of the depleted uranium. The issue is with DU is that there hasn't been any study. And we know it's radioactive. We know it will enter the food chain eventually. It has to. And there hasn't been any study, and needs to be.
Well, I'm not sure there hasn't been any. Perhaps what has been done isn't well known enough.
By the Navy.
Oh, yes, none by the Navy. Well, maybe they're not the best people to do the study. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But, in terms of, the result of fire and depleted uranium in the ocean, 30 miles off the coast.
Yes.
That has not been studied.
Yes. Well, let's hope that wonderful oceanographic researchers will take that on. Perhaps they'll do a little better than the Navy. I wonder if we could wrap up with any references that you'd like to share, your favorite websites, your own website, for example. Will you tell us about those?
Yeah, well, our website where we post to, and actually what I'm going to do is I've gotten quite a bit of documents from the Navy, from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I plan to put it on the Ground Zero website.
What's that address?
It's www.gzcenter.
For Ground Zero,
gzcenter.org.
Great.
Yeah.
And do you have any other favorite websites that you're, of course, aside from traprockpeace.org, what else do you like to look at?
Actually, I try and follow a number of different things. Actually, what I go to almost every night is, I think it's antiwar.com to see, they do carry some depleted uranium issues and some Trident issues, but it's primarily Middle East issues that are on that.
Mm-hmm. And would you like to give your contact information, Glenn? Is there any way people should contact you, or just would you like to see them to check out your website?
Well, they can contact me through the website. It's info@gzcenter.org.
And great.
It goes to me and another person.
Great. Well, we're going to bring your information to Hamburg, Germany in mid-October of this year, and look forward to whatever else you'll send us. Thanks so much for the depth of your work and the depth of your commitment.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to Glenn Milner of the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action in Paulsbo, Washington. Good night.